When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 514. I'm in New York. I just did the Today Show. I feel very fancy. An adult. It was fun. Everyone was really nice to me. I got Kevin Spacey's dressing room because he was on earlier. We didn't meet. And we kind of passed each other in the hallway. We kind of made eye contact. And I was like, yeah, Spacey, you know what's up. But then I think he was looking at someone behind me. Oh, I just want Kevin Spacey to know who I am. Is that so much to ask? It is? All right. I'm a douche. Please come out. And, well, there's actually a couple more tickets left for the midnight show at Caroline's. All the other shows are sold out. Those shows are this weekend, so May 2nd and 3rd. And then go to carolines.com for tickets. Then I'll be at Wise Guys in West Valley City, Utah on May 29th, 30th, and 31st. And then I'm going to be at Helium in Portland June 12th, 13th, and 14th. And there's some other shows coming up in the fall and some Comic-Con announcements soon. So go to Nerdist.com for information on that. I'd like to thank for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, NatureBox, which is basically a healthy snack subscription service starting at $19.95 a month, where you can discover and enjoy healthy snacks right to your doorstep. It, the problem is that if you don't kind of monitor, and then I'm talking to people who are, you know, as you start to get older, you need to pay attention to these things. But if you're not really monitoring what you're snacking on throughout the day, you can all of a sudden just be gorging on tons of calories and stuff and not even really realize what you're putting in your body. But NatureBox will let you know exactly what you're putting in your body. It's delicious snacks. They're healthy. Each bag of snacks is full size, so there's 3 to 5 servings in there. There's no high fructose corn syrup. There's no trans fats. There's no artificial sweeteners or flavors. It's just a delicious, healthy snack that you don't even have to think about. You can carry them around and then just sort of munch on them throughout the day and not worry about stuffing too many calories into your tummy box. So go to naturebox.com/nerdist, all in lowercase, and you're going to get 50% off your first box. That's only $10 for your first box at naturebox.com. I'd like to thank them for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast and keeping us healthy and snacking. This episode is Jim Gaffigan, who was just on At Midnight the other night with Todd Glass and Nikki Glaser, which was a particularly fantastic episode. Jim's new special, Obsessed, is now available on jimgaffigan.com. This would be Jim's, well, we sort of explained at the beginning, it's technically his fourth appearance, but actually only the third that we were able to put up because of a technical problem on a live show. But here we go. It's Nerdist Podcast with my pal Jim Gaffigan.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Jim Gaffigan returns to the Nerdist Podcast for a triumphant third appearance.
Well, there was a fourth. This is the third. One time we taped it at the theater.
We were at Comics.
No, we were at Comics the first time.
Yes, and the second time we were at Meltdown, right?
Yeah, but no, there was a time in between. There was a live show.
What
were we? And we recorded it at, it was in...
Oh, it was in New York. Oh my God, that was so heartbreaking. That was in New York at the it's the 400 seat theater.
It's right on Broadway.
No, 23rd Street. Oh. No, 23rd Street. It's where Doug Benson does
Gramercy.
All his.
It's the Gramercy.
Yeah.
And something happened with their equipment where there was a throughout the entire, because you were on and Tom Lennon was on.
Yeah.
And it was a fucking great show. And we got it afterwards and we were heartbroken. And there was no way to polish out it. I don't know if it was a bad cable or something. It was so, but that was before we started bringing Katie places. And that's now why we bring Katie everywhere, because
it's called PK. It's pre-Katie. Are we recording right now?
Yeah, we're recording right now. Because you can't always trust that whatever person happens to be at the thing is gonna, like, it's a new setup for them to record a podcast. So they sort of do it on the fly. Oh man, that fucking, I was so upset by that. Yeah. Anyway, so this is the fourth but third released appearance.
Yes, this is a special one.
This is our paper one. This is the paper anniversary.
I don't know. I don't know what those.
The third sort of fourth. The fourth sort of third one at the same
time.
It's
a special one.
Congratulations. I heard Obsessive did huge numbers.
Yeah, it did all right. I think it did well, you know, which is great. You want it to, right?
Yes.
You're looking at me like, are you going to play, false modesty here, Jim?
No, I mean, gosh,
I don't even care.
I didn't check to see that millions of people watch my special. I mean, the exact number I could give you, but I'm not, it's not about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's depending which demographic you want me to explain. I mean, I don't understand it, but I do understand that it did well.
Yes, I heard it did incredibly well.
Which is great.
So congratulations on that.
Well, thank you.
You've experimented with a couple of different models of releasing comedy specials. Do you have a favorite at this point?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's changing all the time, right? So I know that, I did the self-release last time and then was approached by Netflix. So like 6 months after it went to Netflix. But I think that, Comedy Central, you can't beat eyeballs, right? So in the end, you want people to see the stuff, right? And so I definitely made less money going to Comedy Central, but I do want to have some longevity. I kind of feel like specials or albums, they're not a huge income source. I know some people make a lot of money doing it, but some of it is. There's a sense of pride of like completion, but some of it is also, maybe gaining more people understanding you or.
Yeah. I think it's also it's really just sort of the sum total of this is what I've been working on for the last two years. Here it is. And hopefully this will keep the ball in the air so I can start the process over again, but then get people to come out to watch that process over again.
Yeah. And as a comedian, we would do this anyway.
Yeah.
I've been so excited about, my album and, on iTunes, but in reality, you make maybe 10 cents or 30 cents. You don't make any money.
It's all in the, I think it's a very similar, probably even worse model than the record, like the music industry.
Right.
Because comedy albums historically our shared manager, Alex Murray, and I used to go through and laugh but be sad at the same time when you look at the Billboard charts of comedy albums and it's just like, oh, there were a couple. It was like, Mitch Hedberg, Dane Cook, and then all the blue-collar comics would sell a fuck ton of comedy albums.
Yeah.
But it still, in comparison to music, was not a big number.
Right.
And then it would drop from like 100,000 to like 13. Like there was a steep drop between the top and the medium guys.
Well, the book world is like that too. Like you're like, oh, you're on the New York Times bestseller list and you're like, wow, that's amazing. How many did I sell? And they're like, you sold 35. And you're like, 35?
It's really hard to sell 35.
And, I'm exaggerating, but it's not that much. Like you think there's 300 million people in this country. It's, you'd think, you're like, what am I, maybe I'll sell a million? And they're like, no, you're going to sell maybe 10,000 if you're lucky.
Yeah. And that's good. And if you can do that, that's an accomplishment.
Yeah.
But I guess it's, people's attentions are just pulled in so many different directions now. And there's so much I mean, it's the good thing is that a lot of people are being creative, but the detrimental thing is that there's so much of it that how do you? I guess it just falls on us as performers to like, well, it's our responsibility to rise above the noise. That's survival,
right? And it's also I think it's about consistency and being, you know, keeping on creating, right? So it's, you know, there was a time where you would do one special. And it would change your life forever. Like Dennis Leary did No Cure for Cancer.
Right.
It changed his career.
Bring
completely.
The Pain. Chris Rock had Bring right. the Pain.
I mean, but you know, Chris Rock's a great example of he kept coming back with new hours, and it's amazing. And so you just have to keep banging on the door because with every new album, you know, there's people that have no idea who you are that listen to that album, and then that opens them up to your other stuff, and then. You know, it really comes down to, at least for me, I make my money at theater shows. Really.
Well, you also, even though it wasn't really that long ago, but you still caught that last wave of a special, like Beyond the Pale really, that, I mean, you were doing well as a comic before, but I remember like after that special, shit changed.
Totally.
So you still caught that. And I feel like I think that might have just been the tail end of being able to catch that window.
Absolutely. A lot of luck. And it was, I describe it as I got the crumbs of Dane and Larry the Cable Guy. And, you know, there was the
pretty big crumbs, though. Those are good crumbs.
Good crumbs. And then there was also, you know, people that loved Patton and David Cross would, you know, their second album, they might, or third album, they would buy mine. So it was like, everybody's like, third choice, but it ended up being a decent sized pool.
But you still managed to do, I'm sure we've talked about this before, but I'm so jealous of your ability to write clean material that's funny.
I'm so jealous of it. Jesus tells me to do that.
He does, I'm sure, yeah. And that's what you do what he says.
I listen to what the Lord says. But it's not, you know, I mean, and I think sometimes, you know, like I have some new stuff that my wife just despises. You know, and so she, you know, there's definitely, you know, this writing partner. I write everything with my wife. There's this writing partner who's kind of like, get rid of that. That's lazy, you know, when it comes to, you know, say a filthy joke here or there. Or, but, you know, the cursing thing, I for me, it's like, you know, if I'm using a curse word, which now it's like I rarely do, but it's usually an indication that I haven't finished writing the joke.
That's a fucking great way to look at it. But, you know, I guess it also...
I mean, we're creative people, right? Can't we think of... And I'm not even that smart, so it's like, but can't we think of, like, an adjective besides fuck?
You can.
Right? You know?
But I feel like... I think I'm coming out of it, but there was a period of time where I would say... Where the word fuck was sort of like a sentence filler instead of and be like, I couldn't fucking fucking fuck.
Right, you know? Right.
Like it was just fat. It was just all of the trans fats in the sandwich of my speech.
It's an effective way to communicate, you know, a passionate opinion too, right? But then again, I'm talking about mundane stuff. So it's like, you know, if I am cursing about donuts, that would almost appear... You know, not authentic, right? It's like, oh, he's that angry about donuts.
Jeez, take it down a notch.
Settle
just
down.
Donuts.
I fucking love donuts.
Whoa.
Donuts are fucking awesome.
Jeez, oh, come on.
I could blow a load all over donuts. It's like, that doesn't make sense.
No, keep going. Develop that. More, yes. more. Fuckable donuts. Hashtag fuckable donuts. But I think that it's really important to, like you said, think about the content. Like, you know, I have these stories about my dad that I've been telling, and one of them is about how we were all at dinner and he started telling everyone at the table how to go down on a lady.
No
so,
way.
Yeah, really? Totally true. And so it's hard to – that's inherently a dirty premise because it's an older man talking about cunnilingus to a table of people at a restaurant.
See, but I think that's a great opportunity to write around that, because then if the subtext of the conversation is that your father is in a very diplomatic... I mean, he's a guy from Tennessee, right?
Yeah.
Who's describing this graphic thing, but with this southern charm. You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, did he curse when he was described?
Yeah. My dad's filthy. Yeah, my dad's filthy. And he was very graphic in the description. It was so
and
much.
And so you're like at a dinner table?
Yeah. It was after.
Out to dinner? You're like at a Ruth Chris?
He came to see me.
You know when you're eating a pussy?
Yes, I'm serious.
Really?
That's pretty much what it was.
You know, I love your mother when I'm going down on her.
I mean, like, honestly.
That doesn't seem. How are you? You're so different from. See, like, when you curse, I know that that's you playing, but like, there's nothing scumbaggy. About you. Like, there's nothing. You never have to worry about Chris Hardwick, like, you know, slipping some drugs into a girl's
no,
drink.
You're fine with that.
Do you know what I mean?
Never going to happen. But he, you know, my dad, it was, I'd been performing.
I'm not implying that your dad's a scum.
No. He liked to drug people, but, you know, he's dead now. No, so there's nothing anyone can do to press any charges.
Some of the greatest comics used to drug people.
I mean, come on. Yeah. It's part of our culture.
Yeah.
But he, I was at Zany's in Nashville. And so he came, he drove from Memphis to see me with the rest of my family there. Yeah. And we went to a restaurant afterwards, and it was, you know, he would get a buzz. He'd have a few drinks, and it was like, let me tell you how to eat pussy. And I was like, oh, no.
And so was your mom there?
My stepmom was there, and my girlfriend and step-siblings.
Right. And so did they think it was hysterical?
Well, it was just him. I mean, it was so, it was not, I mean, everyone's reaction was like, Billy, what are you doing? But not so out of left field, like, this is highly irregular. Like, it was highly regular.
Right.
So it wasn't. It wasn't.
Was it like before the entree or after the entree? I'm such a pig. I'm like, when was he doing it? It's like, you know, before you enjoy this port, let me tell you what you should be doing later on.
Yeah, he would just.
You know, if we got a digestive going, then you could totally go down.
He just took the two little flaps of the sandwich and just peeled it back a little bit. And like, then. You know,
this Cuban reminds me of what I like to do to your stepmother. What?
He would say things like, if you accidentally come into our room in the middle of the night and her hands are up on the wall, she's not hanging a picture. He would say things like that. And so in the telling of these things, which I think are very, I mean, he knew he was being silly. Like, he wasn't.
Right.
He wasn't completely disconnected from. He wasn't a sociopath.
Like, he wasn't like he didn't take his pants off and start.
No.
Let me tell you something.
Nor did he think like, why do these humans not understand these human things I am explaining?
Right.
He knew that he was getting a rise out of people, but these are very difficult stories to tell because the I like your. We're very light and dark side of the force here. You're like, no, this is an opportunity to make it charming. And I'm like, let's just talk about what do you, you know.
No, it's interesting. Because, you know, I went to Ireland and their airline is called Aer Lingus. And I was like, that's a little inappropriate, right? Even though I think that was an Alex Murray idea. Giving full credit. Not that he'll ever listen to this.
He's never going to pursue comedy. So you could totally do something with it. But then, so you have a premise like Aer Lingus, which is setting you up.
Right.
It's because we run into this a lot on At Midnight when we're coming up with questions for the comedians. We go, well, where are they going to go with this?
Right.
How many different places can you go with that? So do you go with what are the old what's next or what are the competing airlines or what were the rejected names or like what are the is that where you go with it?
Right. No. Like, I didn't even use it. Like, you know, some of it, I'm such a. Twitter is my notepad, so I'll usually, if I can think of a joke on it, I'll throw it on Twitter, and then, you know, if it gets a reaction, I might be, maybe there's a joke there, but I don't know, you know, sometimes if it's too toxic, because it's not just like, I mean, I've, you know, on my first album, I have some kind of dirty stuff, but how do you follow that? How do you talk about... You know, how do you talk about fortune cookies after you've done an Aer Lingus joke? You can't really, right? You know, like trying to get your tongue into that fortune. It leads you
down a path.
Right. I mean, by the way, I think Chris Rock can go filthy and clean pretty well, but I can't.
Yeah. And also it's smarter for you. It's the comics like yourself who don't have to do that. It's from a business perspective, it's just smarter because you're automatically TV friendly. You can automatically do corporate gigs, which you can't do if you're filthy. You automatically have a larger audience because families can watch your show and not feel You know, there are a lot of layers. Like, kids can laugh at the edgy approach, but the adults can laugh at the clean premises, and it's right. Great. I'm so jealous of it.
But you know, I mean, I wish that it was more calculating, but I don't think it was. I think it's one of those things where you find your sweet spot. Like, you know, as comedians, we discover our point of view, and then we can write from that point of view, whether it be I'm lazy or I like food or you look at like some social satirists, like don't trust the government or it's a crazy world. And so, you know, some of it is, I don't think it's like, it's not like, well, you know, if I do this, then I can actually get most of Utah to enjoy my, you know, there wasn't a calculation, but there is, I would say that there is I remember Seinfeld talking to a comedian after he saw him. I can't even remember who the comedian was. And he said, you can work dirty, but it's a bad idea. So, like, I mean, I know that when I had some filthy jokes, when I had to rewrite them to do Letterman or Conan, you know, like, we're going to say when I was on Letterman in a couple of years and people are going to be like, it's like the...
like being on Carson.
Right. It's just like, it might as well be the, you know, if only I could think of some old,
Jack Benny?
Show. Jack Benny. It's like the Jack Parr show.
Yeah.
Remember the Jack Parr show?
I don't think so. Was that a show?
We're turning into like these 90-year-olds. Remember the little Letterman show?
Yeah. Well, it's our attention spans are so short that, you know, a year after he's off the air, it's like, who? What
there was
happened?
A guy Letterman? Was that in black and white? You know?
Well, also, because now you could say, like, oh, when these comedians did Carson, you mean Carson Daly? No, Johnny Carson!
Right.
Like, there's so many already. And there's so much shift in late night now. Right. So many.
Probably the biggest influence was At Midnight.
I would have to say, yes.
No, there are so many options. Like, who's going to replace Ferguson now?
Don't know. And
I think it would be interesting if he replaced himself.
Craig Ferguson's going to replace
him. He comes back, but he changes his name. Instead of C-R-A-I-G, it's K.
K. I'll tell you what. I just hope that it's not... And I say this as a white guy. Even I'm like, there's too many fucking white guys in late night television. There needs to be like... I would like to see a female comic or a comic of a different ethnicity. Just like, even from... As a white person, I'm saying I think there are too many white people populating late night television.
Well, you know, the weird thing is, like, in some ways, it's like, I mean, your show is very different. Like, do we need another talk show, whether it's like a white guy or a woman talking to another? Like, it's still a talk show. It's not like, oh my gosh, they're going to interview Katie Holmes. Can you believe it? You know, that used to be really important. And now it's like, oh, I can find out everything I want on Katie Holmes now.
Yeah.
I mean, I can because I have a lot of information.
A ton of surveillance and
I know nothing. Yeah. Do we sound like we're drunk? We sound like we're drunk.
And then another thing. The internet.
Katie Holmes.
Fuck,
you know,
my wife.
It's weird. You know, Katie Holmes is Pete Holmes' mom.
What? I did not know that.
A lot of people don't
feel like
know that.
That would be on a tabloid
That's
or something.
That's why he's so friendly and outgoing.
That's right. That's interesting. So she must have had Pete at the same time that she was a baby, which is, I mean, like, that is a medical miracle.
I mean, you know what? She didn't want to deal with some of the pregnancy stuff. So she was, like, born, they took the egg out, and then Pete came. Actually, you know, Pete was born, his head came first. A lot of people did. And he was smiling. He was like, hi, everybody.
Yeah, Pete's first cry was, ha!
When Pete dies, like, in his casket, he better be smiling.
I mean,
right?
Seriously.
He's got to be smiling. Like, he's like,
ah! And then they could just play that on a loop over and over again as people walk up. Ha!
And he's going to wear a tie with the unbuttoned shirt. The casual, right? Like, he's like, he always looks like he's about to, do a scene in a John Hughes film.
he is a modern day Ducky. He is 2014's John Cryer. Now, I know that we still have John Cryer on Two and a Half Men, but he's 80s John Cryer.
Yeah, but now John Cryer's a billionaire. But by the way, I love Pete Holmes. I don't want
anyone Pete's, to think Pete's that. Wonderful.
Pete is, Everyone Pete, likes Pete Holmes.
You cannot like Pete Holmes. Katie, you work with Pete all the time. Do you still like Pete? See, he's a good guy.
She took too much time.
I did. And also, it was
She's
a little.
Like, yes,
it was
I'm
a
ready.
Little, it was a little.
I'm ready.
The way
yes, I like him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have this answer right at the top. Yep.
But if we didn't like him, he would enjoy it.
He would love, and he would want to understand why. That's why I love about Pete is that he really, Pete does the thing that I think most people should try to do, which is, he, you know, so many people judge based on very little information, but yeah. Pete will try to get as much information about something as possible to try to understand it as much as possible, right. which is a real asset. I mean, it's a good thing. It's a good trait to have.
Yes.
Because we just write people off based on no information these days.
Chris, in 10 years, what is the comedy landscape going to look like? We need your input here.
Well, we'll all be dun, replaced
dun.
By...
Here, let me do a sound effect. Dun, 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 dun.
In
dun,
the year 2024, dun. Human comedians will no longer exist. Comedy will be done by automatons at Japanese sushi-style restaurant clubs.
What is... like, who's going to be the biggest comic in the United States?
In 10 years? I don't know. It's... boy, that's really tough to say. Because, I mean... Part of me thinks, well, it could be someone we don't know yet, but at the same time, knowing how long it takes to build,
yeah, yeah,
then it could be, it's probably someone, it's very likely someone that we know already.
It could be someone in this room right now. No.
Kyle Clark?
It is Kyle. Dun, 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 dun.
Kyle's been taking all these notes all the time at all these shows.
Dun, 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 dun.
Well, you're doing the This Is a Fox TV special, and we're...
Dun, dun. Oh, breaking news?
No, no, no. Like, it's a Fox TV special. Like,
oh, yeah.
Exposing magic or...
Dun, dun, dun,
you know,
dun,
like the,
dun. We'll be right back.
Telling the future.
Where they do...
Or
like,
will we?
Like, then they do a recap, like you forgot everything during the commercials. We're doing an analysis of what will be in 10 years, right when we cut back. And then
not
they come
yet,
back
though.
And they're like, 10 years from now, what will the comedy scene look like?
On tonight's special, commercials may kill you right after these messages.
I predict, here's what I predict. I predict Nikki Glaser, huge.
No question.
I think Hari, kind of huge.
Mm-hmm.
I think Nate Bargatze, huge.
Yep.
And eventually a senator from Tennessee.
I also predict Hannibal Buress.
Hey, well, Hannibal's already huge.
But he's not... I mean, like really, 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 like, you know, Louis, like...
Oh, right, right, know, like Chris Rock kind
yeah,
of...
Yeah, exactly. There's a handful like, of...
What does he say?
You know, there's only a handful of spots for, like, the mega comedians.
Right, the voice
and
of
you're
America.
Up there, too, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I'm, like, the voice of the Christians. No, so who else is going to be huge?
Ron Funches.
Huge.
I think Mike Lawrence is going to be amazing.
Yeah,
be
yeah.
Boy, I don't know. And then
who's going to be dead? Let's talk about who's
oh
going to be dead.
Oh, my gosh.
Jim Gaffigan will be dead.
Cuckoosh.
I just shot Jim with a fake nail gun. That was my space work that I did there. I thought it didn't really
and
work out
well. Walking Dead will still be going in 10
still be
years.
Going, yeah.
I feel like it will be.
And I'll still be hosting that after show, which I'm happy yeah. to do.
And they're going to say, Mr. President... of the United States, thanks for still doing Talking Dead.
Well,
that's
I feel like
my
it's,
prediction.
As part of my public policy to help people deal with the trauma of this zombie apocalypse.
As if anyone... Would you want to be president of the United States? That sounds horrible to
me. I think it sounds terrible to be president, but I do feel that my experience on Talking Dead would make me the ideal candidate in an apocalypse. Like, I feel like I could help people... I could counsel people through it.
Right. You would be kind of... Yeah, you'd be good.
I think... to me, the idea of being president...
Well, you know, that might happen, too.
It could happen. Yeah, it could totally happen.
Yeah.
And I'm already right there.
You're
so
already
if,
there.
If it happens during an episode
and
of Talking
there,
Dead,
that,
then
that,
I'd
that
lucky.
Decoration in the middle of the table with just fingers standing up.
Yeah.
Then
yeah,
it would be, that would
then
be,
it would be
too,
like
right?
the presidential seal
yeah.
on the table. We would do Talking Dead from the Oval Office every week.
And Norman Reedus, he would just be so dreamy.
Well, he'd be Secretary of State.
He'd be Secretary of Hunkdom.
I would put...
And Maggie would be there, the character that plays Maggie, who's from England, whose name is Cohan.
Lord Cohan.
James Ham Cohan's daughter.
What?
A lot of people don't know that.
I didn't realize that either.
Yes.
And then he started dating Katie Holmes, which is strange. So Pete Holmes and Lauren Cohan are actually
siblings. You know, she has an exceptional career because 99% of all British actors have to play a character from 100 years ago or one where it's, you know... One of those Lord of the Rings movies.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to play a contemporary character.
No. But I do think that it would be a good model for that after show because then it could be like, and Vladimir Putin's on the phone. But we're not talking about politics. We're talking about like, why did Rick leave Judith?
You know, let's put the Ukraine aside because there is something here that is, you know, Earl or Merle was really not a bad character.
I mean, they chained him to a pipe. He had to cut off his hand. What's he supposed to do?
I mean, that is very similar to what Soviet Union encountered when we broke up.
I'm sorry. That's
that
all the time
Yeltsin,
we have.
He destroyed this country.
Mr. Russian President, that's all the time.
That was me doing the voice of a Russian.
It was really good, right? Yeah, it was really good.
I wonder how worldwide will comedy be?
It will always be worldwide.
I think it's growing. I think it's growing.
Well, you know, the internet and stuff. I mean, it's...
The interwebs. It's changing.
But I want to go back to your earlier point.
Have you heard of podcasts? Those are big.
No.
Too. Yeah.
A pod what?
Podcast.
Who would listen to such a thing?
I think it has some... It's like that Disney movie. Remember...
The computer wore tennis shoes?
No, the old people that found pods and then they became...
Cocoon.
Young. And some of them, that guy went back to adultery. That was kind of sad. So sad. You know, a lot of those guys, a lot of people don't know that. Cocoon, all those characters were played by Johnny Knoxville.
Oh, every single one.
Every single one of them.
I don't know.
Pretty
yeah.
impressive.
I think Johnny Knoxville managed to play Wilfred Brimley in five or six.
Our Town.
Yeah, he was
he
in Our Town. He was in, what was the
he
series
did the
of Wilfred
Quaker
Brimley
Oates
was
commercial.
In?
That was Johnny Knoxville,
was
too.
Was it in like I'll Fly Away or something? Or the, some sort of family drama? Yeah, and Johnny Knoxville also played Wilfred Brimley in Diabetes
He also played Corky.
Yep, and Life Goes On. That was Steve-O.
That was Steve-O. Steve-O was the dad.
Yeah, he was the dad.
Steve-O was the dad. And then there was the woman who was Don't Cry For Me, Argentina.
Evita Perón?
Yeah.
Or Madonna.
Or the, come on, where's somebody here? do you know what I'm talking about? No.
No, okay.
All right, let's talk about something. Let's talk about...
I want to go back to your earlier...
Yes,
I want to
sure.
go back to your earlier idea, because I have always thought this, that being president of the United States would be the worst thing to do.
It would be horrible.
It sounds terrible.
Right.
No matter what you do, you automatically piss off half the country.
Right.
And it's also... I feel like government is an impossible boat to steer. I feel like it's impossible. You can't steer it.
But you know what? That's because you've lost hope. But you know what? If we get the right person in, no, it's like, how naive are we? Maybe this, you know, we are so naive. I mean, I love Obama, but like, I think of how naive we were. Like, you know, maybe this charismatic guy will make the country come together. What am I, like 12? Is this an after-school special? Like, one person's going to be like, you know what? You're right. Let's put these differences aside figure it out.
He's anyway. Got a point. It's like the whole country is like the townsfolk.
Yeah, we finally come together, and then Kevin Klein stands up and says that he's gay, and you know we're all right with it. It's amazing. I love America.
Well, does that mean we can date Phoebe Cates now if Kevin Klein admits that he's gay?
Oh my gosh, the horrible thoughts that I had in my head as a teenager towards Phoebe Cates. I'm talking about murder and dismemberment.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But
of course.
No, I mean, she was a big crush. Who was your first crush? Female. I know you've had a lot of male crushes.
Oh, I think the biggest one was probably, I'm embarrassed to say,
Wilfred Brimley.
It was Wilfred Brimley. Not Johnny Knoxville Wilfred Brimley, like the kids like. Yeah. Wilfred Brimley.
Mustache and all. Like
all of it.
I mean, there's always a mustache.
Yeah, yeah. Also, well,
is
one
that
time
why
I was,
you make me put on a mustache when I come over?
One time I was molested by a walrus as a kid, and I think it transferred into adult life. Then I had to develop this Wilfred Brimley fetish.
Yeah.
And also PGA player Craig Statler was another
there
one.
There you go.
It's my weirdest sports reference ever. What were we just talking about a second ago?
I think we were talking about Heart to Heart.
Oh, okay. So Robert Wagner and Stephanie Powers. Millionaires, but they also just like solving crimes.
They're detectives. And there's Mrs. Hutch. She's lovely.
She's the... Let's
talk about more references that people that have downloaded the podcast.
You know, Max, their housekeeper assistant, also part of the Walrus Fetish. Yeah. It was Olivia Newton-John was my very first
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, I think I've discovered my penis.
Right.
Because between...
Well, it, you know, it might have been Princess Leia initially, but then, but Olivia Newton-John.
That's really a surprise. You?
I know. But in Greece, like at the end when she gets all leather Tuscadero at the
when
end.
When she gets dirty whored up.
Yeah, yeah. It's so great.
That is just, it's just wrong.
It was the great moment of, what's this?
I don't even have an image of her in those pants. I can't even remember what she looked like in those tight spandex pants.
You know, the second time I had an experience like I had with my, and I'm sorry to make it dirty, but like I had with my penis when I first saw Olivia Newton-John was like, when I
just liked her because she had the name John in her name.
That's what it was. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Homophobia never gets old. And by the way, I'm totally for that gay couples should be married. I actually like the fact that there are gay men. That means that there's less competition for women, even though I'm married and I have 1,000 children.
Unless you do have you have literally 1,000 children. But I think it was the only other time I had that experience was when I feel like I discovered that Olivia Newton-John helped me discover that my penis had a function. And when I first got an iPad and I was like, I don't, it can do this. Like it was that feeling of, wow. You know, those were the two times.
Did you ever watch I'm sure you did, but the Batman series with Adam West,
of course.
There was Catwoman.
And Julie Newmar?
Was like, she had like a little daughter or something like that. That was Cat Girl or something like that.
And that was yours?
You know, she wasn't like...
Or was it Burt Ward? Be honest.
I was 10. I mean, robins are a very attractive bird, but no. There was a Catwoman had a daughter or like a niece that was a little bit younger than
I think she
Julie.
Was called Kitty Litter.
Was she called Kitty Litter?
I don't think so.
But she was amazing. And I remember I don't understand these feelings. But that was and Tatum O'Neill. I had a big crush on Tatum O'Neill.
Oh, sure. Little Darlings?
And she was on the Jack Parr Show.
Little Darlings with Christy McNichol?
Oh, my God. Christy McNichol was such a cutie. She was on Family.
And she was also on One Day at a... No. Yes, One Day at a... No.
No, that was Valerie Bertinelli. Wow, she was... Yeah.
Valerie Bertinelli and Mackenzie Phillips.
Mackenzie Phillips. Yes. Yeah. So sad. Drugs.
Well, drugs, and also her father was having sex with her that entire time.
Yeah, I don't know if that had anything to do with it. I'm joking. That is just so... That is horrible. I hate myself for even saying that.
No, but it's so horrible that you can't not... like because if you think about the reality of it, it's one of the worst things.
When you're in the grocery store and you're buying condoms, probably.
Sure, yeah.
And oysters.
Yeah. Because I don't want to raw dog the oysters. I got to wear condoms when I'm with an oyster.
And you see all those magazine covers.
Sure.
I'm talking about the ones... Wouldn't it be great if I threw up? Anyway, but when you see all those covers, what percentage of the people on the covers do you have any idea who they are?
It's a shrinking number of people. Right. It's a shrinking number of people because there are so many, you know, the widespread tentacles of reality television mean that there are, thousands of people now that I just had no, it's so outside my sphere of anything. We've been watching... We spent the whole weekend watching My Big Fat American Gypsy Wedding, which was a fascinating show, which led us into Breaking Amish, which was the story of Breaking Amish. Is like, we pulled a bunch of Amish kids off of their farms and a Mennonite girl and put them in New York and like, let's see what happens.
Wow, that seems socially responsible.
It's very socially responsible to completely drop someone in a cultural cold bath like that. But then, you know...
Were
they
on Rumspringer at least?
They were not on Rumspringer. But what you find out when you kind of dig around on the internet is it's like... Or at least according to the internet, allegedly, it's all bullshit. Like they were... like one of them wasn't even really practicing anymore. And they
dishonesty in reality television?
And according,
that's not in the newspaper.
According to the internet, one of the couples that forms on the show had actually already been a couple with a kid. But on the show, it's like, I think I should talk to her, but I don't know if I should. Like everyone sounds like...
That's why we need people like Jerry Springer to come get down to the facts of things.
Everyone on that show sounds like a Bruce McCullough character from Kids in the Hall. Oh, and then I have to put my covering on.
All right, let's talk about Rihanna.
Okay, let's do it.
You obviously
you mean the Fleetwood Mac song, right?
No, I'm talking about it's getting to the point where someone just sent me a tweet of because I'm a source for topical humor.
Of course,
And they sent me a photo of her on a magazine cover where she's got no top on.
Yeah, Instagram pulled
and
that.
And I was so offended, I looked at it for like 8 hours.
Right, exactly.
And
just
like,
to process your offensive.
At what point, at what point, I mean, obviously I'm not, what are we going for here? What is the end game here? Like, where, you know.
I'll tell you exactly. I mean, yeah. It's if we're having a serious conversation about it, it's exactly what we were talking about with comedy. It's shock humor, shock pop culture, shock culture, as opposed to just, I'll let my art speak for itself. You know what I mean? It's like it's Madonna did that, Lady Gaga did. It's just that kind of like
I didn't even know she was part of that.
I don't think she's part of that. I sound like
the old man. She's such a pretty girl. Why would she have to
take out those delicious cans? Yeah. Why would she have to do that? Because I'm kind of a feminist.
A lot of people don't know Rihanna's last name is Gaffigan.
It is.
It is. Yeah. Rihanna Gaffigan.
They don't know. They didn't know. You guys are totally...
Yeah, we're related. First wife.
She she kept the last name.
Yep. She kept it out of respect. I broke up with her. I was like, look, this is not going to work.
Sorry.
A lot of your outfits I'm not into.
Yeah, I'm not.
The beads, I don't know what's going on with the beads. But a lot of those tattoos say... You know, actually, a lot of those beads are my bacon jokes. just transcribed. It's pretty amazing.
And just right below her navel, it says Hot Pockets with an arrow pointing down.
Yeah, it says Hot Pockets, and then it says, I'm loving it. A lot of them. And there's a lot from my new ones. She's getting more tattoos.
All across her back.
All across her back.
Says, you can't tell me that Kevin Bacon's success doesn't owe in part to the fact that his last name is Bacon.
Exactly, exactly.
And then there's a picture of a piece of bacon in a jean jacket from the Footloose cover.
It is, I have these bacon jokes, and like people will come up to me when I'm eating in a restaurant, and they'll be surprised that I'm not eating bacon. Like, sincerely surprised. Like, they would think, well, I'd think that would be the only thing you'd eat.
I mean, it's like if you went on a talk show, if you went on, like, a Crossfire show, and then the chyron on the bottom, I said, Jim Gaffigan, bacon advocate. You're like, no, I just...
Well, you know that what happened is, you know, because Mr. Universe, there was a dollar, because I'm a great guy, donated from every purchase to the Bob Woodruff Foundation. So I was on CNN during... Veterans Day or something like that, and they were interviewing me, and I didn't know this, but it said Jim quote Hot Pocket unquote Gaffigan. That's how I was listed. Not even as comedian, just Jim Hot Pocket Gaffigan. I mean, you know, there's, you know, I mean, I know that I'm kind of associated with one joke, but it's like, that's where it's like,
well, and you kind of start to feel like I feel like there would be good cause for you to call the Hot Pocket people and be like, look, we did not come to a formal arrangement, but I feel like you guys have benefited from this a lot.
No, they totally have. Well, I've benefited too. And so is America. And so is doctors. Right? It's really the whole like infrastructure of the medical community. Pharmaceuticals, drugstores. I'm keeping drugstores open. But you know what's weird? I mean, the entertainment industry, like, are you surprised? I mean, your dad was a bowler, right? So that's kind of the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
But the entertainment industry, isn't there a part of you that's like, I'm embarrassed that I work in the entertainment industry?
Well, if I worked in a part of it that I wasn't proud of, then yes. But I feel like, you know, I feel like we get to work in a little corner of it we can
It's less silly.
I mean, there are so many shitty shows that I hosted throughout the years just to survive that if any one of them had accidentally caught fire and then I would have been known for that thing, I still, no matter how much money I would have made, I still would have been like, Ship Maze is just like, it's for a specific audience. It's not really for you and me.
Right,
you know, I would still have disclaimers about it in talking about the show.
No, because I kind of, you know, I just don't ever want to be one of those people that's like, you know, what I do, Chris, is really important. because I look at the entertainment industry, it's kind of, you know, when you think about like when human beings were initially forming communities, they were like, all right, obviously, if we work together, this will be better. You know, like you could build roads, you could build houses, and the person in the entertainment industry was like, and I can put on shows.
You could put on what?
And I can put on shows.
I don't, what does that mean even?
Yeah, well, you know, there could be like people like after you build the road and after I could, we could do a show, like a dance.
But we have to fortify our community. Like we have to protect
community.
Ourselves.
That would be a great show. It would be like kind of like a community theater.
What's a theater?
Theater, that's like, you see those commercials where they're like, I think it was narrated by Robin Williams. It was like, you know, art is about poetry and adding another thing, and life is about a poem and all this stuff. And I'm like, there's a little bit more practical existence going on, right? Anyway, what I'm saying is I'm an everyman.
Yeah.
I ain't a weirdo like you guys.
Life is art? No, thank you.
No, thank you, weirdo.
Yeah. Life is a 9-to-5 job with a steel lunchbox.
And then you have a can of beer.
Got a can of beer.
No, but my point is that I just don't think we should take it that seriously.
So seriously. Yeah, no, I agree. But there is something to the idea that, you know, in the absence of a monarchy and royalty, that right. celebrity culture is sort of American royalty in a way. Like right. the way that it's treated anyway. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying in the way that it's treated is like, they right. have attained this rarefied.
Right. It's unbelievable. George Clooney's getting married.
And
shut the roads down.
And the funny thing is that it's not that hard to, if you just want
it's not
fame,
his fault.
It's not that hard to get famous. Yeah. Like it's easy to get, especially now.
Right.
Like fame is not really, in and of itself, is not, it's just not a real thing. It's just right. fame is an Instagram filter. Like it's not.
Right.
It's just a fake layer of something.
Yeah. And by the way, I don't want to sound like somebody. I mean, I also love so much what I do. Like it's a miracle that I get to do what I enjoy, and so do you.
Yeah.
And maybe less her. But you know, it's like, but it's this amazing thing. So I'm not complaining about what I do. I just think that, you know, there's just this, you know, it just, there's something about our society where we care a little bit more about the Academy Awards than we do about the presidential election. And that's a little weird to me.
So I think what I hear you saying is that we should shift all politics to the entertainment business.
That's right. That's
George
right.
George Clooney should be president.
George, oh, he's dreamy.
And vice president.
I didn't get to date him.
No.
Did
it's
you
not
get
too
to
late.
Date Clooney?
No.
No, he's engaged. It's over.
Not yet. Not yet.
He hasn't met eyes with me.
I have sort of a fun but borderline serious thing, and I feel like you would be the guy to talk to us about because we share Alex Murray as a manager.
Yes.
But John Panette dying.
Oh my God.
Which was awful. I really love John. Was this very sweet guy, but it reminded me of. They're having a service for him tonight, but it's the same time that we're taping the show, so
right.
we can't go. But
you could cancel the show and go to
I
it.
Can't cancel the show. Entertainment's
no, you know,
important.
If you cared about
Jim,
it.
I mean, and entertainment
those
is the most important.
The show must go on.
Yeah,
right?
The show. Entertainment
unless it's just taped an hour later.
Bud Abbott, Lou Costello,
no.
did a show the day his son drowned in the pool. That's a true story.
Oh my God!
They had
Please
to do it. They had to
I've
do a live TV
kids.
Show.
Don't even talk
okay,
about
okay.
Kids
I'm
drowning.
Sorry. No, you got tons of kids. So
no, but Panette.
So Panette,
one of the sweetest guys in the world.
And the saddest thing to me is that he had the same demons that a lot of us have, and
yes.
I just it's unfortunate that he just didn't find a way to slay them in time. But I had one Panette story that I didn't. It's one of Alex's favorite stories because it's the most awkward situation that I have ever been in, and it was my fault.
Right.
But this was 10 years ago. I had just signed with Alex, and he represented you and Todd Glass and Panette. And so I went out and saw Panette at Irvine Improv, and he let me do a couple minutes before him, and we hung out backstage. And Panette was great, loved, you know, just a sweet guy.
Such a sweet, generous man.
Very, but backstage, but like really dirty, like really saying a lot of real, not on stage, but backstage, just like a lot of filth. And I go, oh, you know, I totally connect with this guy.
Yeah.
So like a week later, he's having a birthday party at a restaurant, and Alex said, oh, you should come by. So it was Alex and probably Larry Shapiro and John Panette and maybe like four other people.
Yeah.
But I didn't really know anyone here.
Right.
So, of course, as the comic who's trying to be funny, I get him a gag gift. And the gag gift that I get him is a butt plug.
which is more of a, it's more a gift to gag your butt, and right. And a card. Which,
and it was yours. It was a used one.
It was a used one. Right? Maybe that's where I went wrong.
Right.
Yeah, I washed it in the dishwasher. Yeah. And then I got him this card. That was...
I want to stick this in your butt. No.
I'm not kidding. All jokes aside.
No.
But it was a birthday card that folded out like three times, and it was an African-American man, and the dong was like a three-folder. So
right,
it just kept folding out dong.
Right.
And so to me, having, you know, connected with him on this level and also being immature and filthy, way worse back then, I thought this would be hilarious. These are obviously joke gifts.
Right.
Who gives someone they don't know a butt plug for their birthday?
Chris Hardwick.
He did. Well, this was the last time I did this. So, everyone's having fun. Yeah. Oh, John's great. Everyone's having a good time. Yeah. Hey, John, I got your... Oh, you didn't have to do that. Come on. What's he? Starts opening. First of all, he opens up the card. And he goes, ha, 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 ha. Oh. Oh. And he sees the card, and I sense, oh, okay. Well, maybe he didn't.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So he goes.
Like, you were like, this is going to be a home run.
In my head, I am thinking, they're going to carry me out of this restaurant.
Yes.
Like, I'm going to be the new champion of comedy with this because dong card.
Yeah.
And so then he starts to open up the little hesitation in the as the paper's opening, and then butt plug. And he just stares at it. And he's just like, oh. Oh,
again, the sweetest, nicest guy. So
thank you, and then leaning over to Alex, you know, like, why would he give me this? Like, I don't understand why. So he's very visibly
right,
not cool with any of this because he doesn't. It wrecked the entire dinner.
Oh,
it's
no.
Alex's favorite story because it was such an awkward moment. Here, I thought, of course, this will be hilarious. And in his mind, he thought I was making a statement about him, or he just didn't really understand what it was. And he was like,
Does he know I like butt plugs? That's what he was thinking.
And so it was the biggest a swing and a miss that I think I've ever had in my life. And I felt so bad about it. And I feel like I don't know if the friendship that we had been developing ever fully recovered. Now, John was always very sweet every time I saw him after that. But there was definitely an air of, like, he thought I was up to something, and I just can't describe. Because in a birthday gift situation, the tone of the present is set by the recipient of the gift.
Yeah.
If they love it and laugh at it, then everyone's like, oh, the king has his treasure.
Yeah.
But when the king is like, what is this? Then it was.
And John was, he worked with Sinatra, so he was of an era where there was like kind of a king of a table, and so he knew that he was the king.
Yeah,
and so but he was the most generous, nice guy. But you know what I think is so amazing about John, and I have a funny story. But what you have to understand, which I guess people know, is that comedians are everyone's flawed, but comedians are typically flawed people, right? So we all have our demons, and sometimes it's pretty obvious what the demon is, you know, in addition to narcissism often.
Sure.
And so with John, people were like, oh, he's an overeater. That's his, but you know, he had other demons. And a lot of comedians have a strange self-destructive thing. Like, you know, John Panette would only kill. But Alex explained to me that, you know, I started doing theaters before John, and but John didn't want to risk going to theaters. I mean, he eventually did theaters in Canada and was very popular, and he did some theaters in the US, but he didn't want to not sell out a place.
Mm-hmm.
So he became dependent on that. And it's like comedians have all these things that we're kind of, we clutch to like a security blanket. So John Panette, who could have gone to theaters 10 years ago, went to theaters 5 years ago because, you know, there's a certain, you want to only kill.
He was a comedian that was of this
the ilk that, because it wasn't like John was on television a lot.
Right.
But he was just a solid touring comedian of just like, you know, you go back to a town every 18 months.
Yeah.
And over years and years and years and 20 years of touring, you know, you've built up this massive, but just from doing live performances. And that's pretty much it. Live performances and a handful of specials.
And he was also somebody that could break into song, like of a different era where he could sing and dance. He did Hairspray on Broadway.
Yeah,
you know, he was like amazing, but there's a couple funny stories. One of the funny stories is I used to open for him. I would middle for him at the DC Improv, which is such an amazing club, and he would he was so well connected. Everyone loved him, right? So I was middling for him, and this is before I ever started doing radio. Like you'd have to get up for morning radio. At the time, I was like, who's gonna get up? Aren't we comedians so we don't have to get up? I'm never, and now I fully appreciate it. But so John told me, he goes, Jim, I have this opportunity to get this tour of the White House, a special tour of the White House. Do you want to come with me? And I was like, what time is it at? And he was like, what do you mean what time it is? It's the White House. You have to go. And I'm like, will I be able to nap afterwards? And he's like, stop it. You're going to be in the war room and all this stuff. And I was like, yeah, all right. I guess, you know. But it was, I mean, that's how much I love sleep.
Did you tour the White House?
Yeah, and I toured the White House with him. And he, you know, he was like that amazingly generous uncle that, you know, was just always so generous.
Sort of like the mayor, like his character feels like it could have been in a Scorsese movie. Like he was the mayor of this honorary mayor of a community that, you know, was untouchable because everyone loved
him. And he toured so much. You know, there's comedians that do this where they just live on the road.
Yeah.
So, like, they don't own an apartment. He went for, like, a year. I remember one time I met him for a movie, Alex and I, and he was staying in a hotel in L.A. for, like, a Tuesday. And I'm like, why is he in a hotel if he's not doing a show? And Alex was like, he doesn't have an apartment. He's just literally on the road making money.
That is a touring comedian.
Right?
Where you just don't have roots.
But, you know, the problem is touring constantly and, you know, getting this strange dose of attention, peaking late at night, you're going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
You're just, you know, you end up, you know, you're like wide awake at 2. You're with people that, you know, are excited, that want to please you. So, like, if you have a weakness, you know, that's what happened to, you know, Hedberg. That's what happened to Geraldo. And that's, you know.
Because people feel like, oh, well, I want to bring this person this thing because it makes them happy in the moment. And it makes me special because I'm bringing them a thing. Like, no, don't.
Yeah, you know, I call it being a victim of the culture. And I definitely was. I definitely was like, you know, you sit there and you're like, you get off stage, you do this amazing theater show, and you're like, all right, what do we do now? And reality is you should go back to your room. And I used to go back to my room for the first 10 years, but then there was a couple of years where I was like, I got to go out. I got to, you know, and so now I'm more of an adult, barely.
Well, I can't even imagine touring I don't think I would have gotten to the place where I could tour if I was still drinking, but I can't imagine having that and just being out on the road. It's just a fucking deadly combination of I have no boundaries in terms of I'll drink till 8 a.m. I don't care.
Right. And if you're in a comedy club, it's free.
I'll go right to the morning TV show from a bar.
A lot of people did. A lot of people did.
Oh, man.
I mean, when you think about it, it's, you know, Mad Men's kind of all, you know, funny and silly with their drinking and their smoking. But generations, serious drinking. Like, I worked on this play on Broadway, serious drinking. Like, some people build up a tolerance where they can drink, like, 8 scotches and then get up at 7 in the morning. And you're like, what? Do you know what I mean? But, like, generations before, like, our grandparents, all these blue laws, it's not like they were like, Jesus said no alcohol on Sunday. They had to do no alcohol so some of these men would go home. You know, the pubs would close in England because people, you know, at 2 p.m. because to get guys to go back to work.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is men are horrible.
We're bad.
We're bad. We're all...
What's one... So
if John's thing was, you know, he was afraid to not sell out a room. What's one that you have, or maybe one that you got over?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, I love stand-up because I think you have to develop a self-awareness, right? You find out who you are. Like,
sometimes
you can't go up there and be like...
too much self-awareness.
Right? No, but you definitely, acting's the same way. You can't audition for a character that's the ugly best friend of Matthew McConaughey and not be like, all right, maybe I'm not a supermodel. But I don't know. You know, I think I always describe it when I go to Vegas, it's like gambling is like the one addiction I don't have. Mm-hmm. You know, like I definitely could go on a tear of self-destruction. That's not to say that, you're not going to find out, I'm doing heroin or anything like that. But, addiction's, it's got a strong vein in my family. So like the way I talk about food is that is, you know, people with addictions, that's, you know, they've more or less said to me that, like, oh, yeah, you have that point of view on things, which is obsessive and all-encompassing.
Which brings us back to obsessive.
Yes.
Obsessed. I mean, I guess that is part of the comic personality because, you know, particularly you're aiming that obsession at a premise, ultimately, and getting super granular on it and trying to rip it back in a voracious way that most people don't, which is why I think if you are that way if you're that way on stage, people go, he's a performer. But if you're that way conversationally, that's when people, and I know a lot of comics get this a lot, where non-comics will go, okay, whatever.
Right.
Where they just sort of like, because most people don't think that way.
Right. Well, and also, I mean, you know, we talk about, the addiction. I mean, coming up with a new joke is, I mean, that's a pretty amazing feeling, right? So, how's that different? I mean, it's a lot different than chasing, a kokai, but it's the same kind of driving force where you're looking for that buzz of when you're on stage and you improvised a line or two.
Yeah.
That changed, 5 minutes of your act. So, I think stand-up is definitely an addiction. We do it every night. You know, we're addicted to laughs.
Yeah.
I'm addicted to laughs. And that's the name of my new album, Addicted to Laughs.
Please make that your Twitter profile bio. Yeah. I'm Jim Gaffigan, addicted to laughs.
I'm just addicted to laughs.
Can't get enough of them.
Can't get enough of them.
I'll take all of them. I'll take all the laughs in the world.
I'll take all the laughs. And you know what? There, we'll be right back.
Jim Carson.
Jim Carson.
But the idea of... having to get up in front of strangers, well, not having to, but getting up in front of strangers and then getting attention from them is also sort of a weird...
Yeah, no, there's nothing normal about what we do. There is nothing normal. Like, people will say to me, they're like, how do you have 5 kids? And I'm like, that's, that's been done by a lot more people than stand-up comedy, right? That is, far less weird than going on stage and trying to entertain strangers.
Yeah.
It's pretty weird.
And get them to accept you and sort of put you up on this pedestal. You're literally on a pedestal.
Yeah. How has At Midnight changed your... Because obviously, people, you've had fans and Nerdist was huge and all this stuff. How has that changed your audience experience when you do shows?
I don't know because I haven't... The show's so new.
Right.
The show's only, really. I mean, we did a month in October, but really, the show just started in January, so it's only a few months old. So I haven't, I've done one live show on the road. We did a couple of At Midnights in Miami for the South Beach Comedy Festival, but I'm actually going to Caroline's. I'm leaving tonight after our show.
Oh, sweet!
And I'm doing Caroline's all weekend, and I think the shows are all sold out, which is new.
That's amazing.
We added a show, and so that's new. And then, but I don't know. People yell points at me now.
Wow.
But other than that, it's tough to say because it's still the show's still
right. And there is like a lag time thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it really does take. I think it takes a couple of years of a show being on the air before people really feel like this show's rooted in our pop culture. It's part of
right.
So I think it's still pretty new. It's still too new to tell. But it'll be interesting to see, like, you know, there'll be some Nerdist podcast fans there. There'll be some bunch of Walking Dead fans there.
So it'll be interesting
to see, like, what the influx of At Midnight.
Now, do you meet people afterwards? You should hire someone to do a study. Why are you here?
You know, it's easier to do it after a theater show.
Right.
It's very hard to do it if you have three shows in a night,
of course,
at the club, because there's a small window of time, and especially the way Caroline's is set up,
people
come out the same way they go in.
Yeah.
And so the last time I was there, I did a meet and greet in between shows, and it created such a traffic snarl for the club.
Yeah.
And it also, if you do it after the last show, the entire staff has to stay there until you're done. So I was keeping the staff there for like an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours after they could go home at, you know, 1 o'clock, 1:30 in the morning. And so it just, I don't know. So it's harder to do
it. What you're saying
is
you're a good guy. I mean, that's part of it.
Well, but then you go, well, who am I who am I going to bum out? You know, like it's sort of like, what's the right thing to do? Is it the right thing to sort of fuck up the way the club is able to get people in and out of shows and keep everyone there longer? Or is it shitty to the people who came out to not go out afterwards? And if I could do it after one show, then I feel bad not doing it for all of the shows. Like, if I do it after the last show of the night, is that really fair just because people who had to come earlier didn't get to? So I don't know what the right thing to do is.
Because I know when we did the at the Gramercy, you went out and
met because there was an area to do it. They had that downstairs area, and it doesn't interfere with the traffic coming in.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's,
I mean, you also appreciate people going. So what's,
no, because I remember, you know, Alex does, maybe he does this thing with you too, but Alex keeps a record in a book of every show you've ever done. And so when these Caroline shows started selling out, he goes, let's do this. Let's play this game. And I hear him like thumbing through this pages, like flip. And he goes, this weekend in 2009, you made $500 to play an entire weekend at Crackers in Indianapolis. And you sold 100 tickets for the whole weekend. Like, the rest of it was papered.
Right. Yeah.
And so you can see like the growth.
Yeah.
And so because it feels like it was not that long ago, I very much want to thank each and every person for coming. But at a certain point, when it starts to get in the way of the venue being able to do their job, it's sort of like, I don't know what to do. I just want to make everyone happy. And I feel like
you should invite them to your hotel.
I should invite everyone to my hotel.
Right.
To the W Times Square. I'm not saying the W Times Square. So I don't know. Do you ever feel like the more you try to make people happy, that a lot of times you can actually fuck everything up that way?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I also think that, you know, you and I hopefully have an approachability thing. Like, there's not this, you know, our careers are not constructed on a mystique.
No, and I don't think there's any air about me or you either, that feels like, hi, can't be bothered with the rabble.
Right. I'm going to buy a scarf.
I'm sure you know comics who hate their audiences. Like, have you met? Do you know comics that like do not really, if given the choice, they would not hang out with the people that would come?
Well,
to
you
see
know
them?
that's a pretty interesting thing, because you reap what you sow, right? So like, if your stand up is, I mean, you know, I'm sure you like your stuff, I like my stuff, but if your stuff is kind of like drumming up kind of like drunk people, that's who's coming. Do you know what I mean?
And if you don't like drunk people, you better. Right. I mean, I think that the classic example is always the, you know, Belushi got super famous from Animal House.
Right.
But he was actually this very complex actor and a very sensitive guy. And so, everyone was like, Bluto! And he fucking hated it.
Right. Right.
But that was sort of like, well,
you know, that's what Chappelle, it's like he's kind of trapped by some of his sketches, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, Steve Martin, it's legendary that he, you know, he couldn't do stand-up anymore.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the book is great. I mean, and he sort of lays out all of that, of being super anxious and not really being able to, but attracting this audience. That's why I think it's really important to not try to speak to everyone.
Right.
Just speak to the people that, you know, just speak to people that you talk about what you like. And then if other people like those things too, they'll find you. And then your audience will be comprised of
like friends and fans as opposed to just ticket buyers.
Right. And that's why it's always strange when someone gains popularity for being on a sitcom. Because then people will go thinking, hey, it's Kramer.
That's Patton.
You know what I mean?
That's Patton. That was King of Queens.
Oh, really?
It took Patton years for people to discover
that
he was
not the guy from King
one of
Queens.
The smartest, funniest people in the world, you know? Like, wow. And not just that guy Spence from King of Queens. Not just like a dopey guy, but like a very insightful and,
right,
you know.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Oh, yeah.
That.
So he was getting, like, King of Queens fans coming out, and then, you know.
They were disappointed.
And then he was doing these.
He's like, I don't like Bush. And they're like, we like Bush.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the you know, like having people in the audience boo him, and then he'd be like, guys, I didn't say George Bush was Hitler. I mean, Hitler was elected. And then they would get fucking, like, it was literally something he said.
Oh, wow. And this is at, you know, wow.
Yeah, like a mainstream room with King of Queens fans, and they just didn't. There was the disconnect. So that's why it's very important for. I mean, and you were on a sitcom for a long time.
I was on, I was on a show, but you know, it was on cable, and it, you know, they did like 8 episodes. I mean, it was nothing compared to King of Queens.
Yeah,
that was huge. But I also played kind of a guy closer to me. Like, I played a dad who was kind of sardonic and sarcastic and good looking. So, you know, it worked for me.
So are you going to have any more kids, or do you think five?
I don't know. You know, it's strange because 5 seems insane. Like, if I talk to, you know, myself, like, from 10 years ago, and I told my, you know, that I was going to have 5 kids, I would have, like, a heart attack. Like, I would be like, oh, my God, then I won't be able to do stand-up. And, or, you know, how could I do that? But, you know, I mean, I always, you know, there's always these moments where I'm talking to my wife where we finally get all the kids to bed, and I'm like, this is amazing. And then, you know, you fall asleep, and then an hour later, one kid wakes up. And so, you know, it's amazing. But so I wouldn't turn it down.
But at a certain point, though, you can kind of, there's a little bit of a long tail of kids where the oldest ones get old enough where it's like, yeah, they could take care of themselves. I can focus on the younger ones to, you know.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, I always joke around when people ask me, I'm like, they're like, what about when your kids are teenagers? And I always say, well, I'll be dead anyway. I mean, because I'm so tired and exhausted, I feel like they're killing me anyway. But I don't know. I mean, there's something very strange about an enjoyment of it. Sounds like someone's lying when they say that they enjoy being a parent. It's like, because all you hear is people complain about being a parent, but it's amazing. I mean, there's enormous amounts of guilt. I feel guilty that I'm away from my kids right now, but I don't know. It's like each of the kids kind of make, you know, like the second to last kid we had was born on Father's Day, and this kid really, like, he loves me to the point where I question his judgment. All right?
Or his motives. He's trying to get close so he can murder
you. And then the last, our youngest, Patrick, is like, he looks exactly like me. Poor guy. But it's also really fun. And he's, you know, so, and obviously all my other kids I love. But it's amazing. So it's like with each kid, there's just this amazing opportunity. Like, you wouldn't want to say no to some of that. You know what I mean? Like, what if the next kid was like, you know, came along and he invented, you know, a way for me to tan?
You know what I mean? I think that's why you have
that
to keep
happen.
Having kids
that
until one finally.
Well, I'm lucky. I don't have to worry, you know, about, you know, the expense. I mean, children are very expensive, and it's not like, you know, I need anything more than like a good burger. It's not like I need my boat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't need that.
Just that and a good way to tan. And
I just need, you know, like a burger. That's what I need. And I'll be dead in a couple of years. Like, when you talk about me,
that'll be the fucking clip that they run on all the Jim Gaffigan predicting,
like,
his own
if you died, you would be described as the Talking Dead guy.
Probably,
right?
Yeah.
Talking Dead.
Oh, no, you know, I'll tell you what would happen.
Jenny McCarthy would speak at your funeral.
Yes.
Yes.
I would. God damn it.
She would cry.
That's the thing, is that of all the things that I'm working on now, which I think are all bigger than Singled Out was, still, it would be like Singled Out host Chris Hardwick died. Like, still. It would still get that, no matter what. no matter what.
Yeah.
I feel like I would have
to... Are you doing The View when you go to New York?
No.
You should.
No, I didn't. I'm doing The Today Show.
Oh, la-di-da-di-da.
I did The View before. I did The View once, and it...
Is Matt Lauer interviewing you?
I don't know who's interviewing
me. Yeah.
The View wasn't fun because I brought... It was when I was doing Web Soup, and I brought a clip on. Again, this was another... I'm like,
was Jenny on there or no?
No, she wasn't on yet. It was Whoopi and Joy and you know, it's funny that they have all such upbeat names for how dour they actually sound.
I did it on Monday. Do you know how old Barbara
Whoopi
Walters
and Joy
is?
And,
do you know how old Barbara Walters is? She's 1,000 years old.
She's 1,000, yeah.
She's 84. I mean, she's 84.
She's
and that
84?
Woman's amazing. She's 84. And she is sharp at it as a tack. She's a great kisser, too.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, amazing.
I brought
like,
a...
All tongue swirling.
I think it has to be.
Yeah.
I brought a clip on from Web Soup, and it was a famous web clip of a girl who's singing, and she gets on a coffee table and falls on her ass, and classic web clip. And, you know, the panel, like half of them are comedians, so I figured, like, oh, they're going to run with
perfect.
This.
Yeah.
So we run the clip. And the girl falls, and then the audience is like, and then Joy Behar goes, oh, I don't think that's funny at all.
Oh, no.
Like, well, thank you. You know,
well, you know, I would say that there's been different kind of times that I'm a View regular, I guess. No, but I did it.
Fucking View apologist.
It was. No, it's so funny because so many of these shows, like if I hadn't been on there, I'd be like, yeah, there's a bunch of ladies complaining. And then you meet them and you're like, yeah, they're pretty nice, you know. But it was pretty fun. It was pretty lax. I mean, you know, Whoopi's cool. You know
no
what
one
mean?
Was really that. It wasn't that anyone was mean to me, but no one was really that nice. And I didn't take it personally because I just assumed like they have to do a show every day. They're running around in a million different directions. There's five of them, and they all have, or I guess five, and so they all have their own things that they're working on. I don't expect anyone to coddle me. I work in television. I know how it works.
Right.
They're working.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a fun experience,
right?
And I at this point in my life, I only want to do fun things.
I think it was pretty fun. It was pretty loose the last time I did. I did a talk show in Ireland. That was interesting.
Oh,
have you done Lingus? No, talk show Lingus. No, I did. I did a talk show, and that was kind of wild because you saw the crowd there, and they have no idea who you are, and to them, you're just speaking in a weird accent, right? And you're American, right? Which is the equivalent of being a douchebag, right?
They think so?
So, I mean, I don't know. That's just what my insecurity was saying. And so it was pretty fascinating to do that, like to go into an environment where you're like, oh, things are kind of stacked against me here.
But I feel like that's why, you know, you're kind of an alien in that world. And so I feel like that makes you kind of charming. As long as you don't go in and you're like, we should have invaded this piece of land.
Yeah.
You know,
no, I was sitting there
cool.
Like, do I sound like John Oliver to them?
There's no way the American accent is lilty and charming in any way. It's too harsh.
Is it too harsh?
I think it's too harsh.
I don't know. They're all foreigners to me.
Yeah, seriously.
They're all weirdos.
Get off your land.
Yeah.
Well, in closing, I brought you this butt plug.
Oh, thank you.
John didn't want it. So
why is there blood on this?
Well, we had some issues. We had some issues.
You know, we just improvise. We just chat for an hour.
So Obsessive is available. Is it on Comedy Central's website?
Obsessed is...
I keep calling it Obsessive. I'm sorry. Obsessed.
Yeah, because... it's on iTunes, and it's on Comedy Central.
And it's
on Amazon. And, you know, I take a portion of all the proceeds that I make, and I put them together, and I buy a pack of gum.
So, John, you're special obsessive. No, it's obsessed.
Obsessed.
Do you have any stories like that where someone just kept fucking up?
No. When I did The View on Monday, they were very nice, but they kept describing it as a book.
They were describing a comedy special as a book.
They're like, well, no, just I think maybe twice. They're like, your new book, Obsessed. And you don't want to correct someone.
It's like a talking book.
You know, they're like, but I was like, well, maybe I seem more like an author. But it was, but I also, I'm like, I have such anxiety. So I empathize with someone if they mess up because I'm a great guy. No, but like if someone messes up, like I'm like, I don't care, you know. So people will buy the book and be like, this is a thin book.
You could have just made it like, it's not a fucking book.
It's not a book. Excuse me.
God damn it. But, Jesus Christ. Barbara, there's a thing called TV. You've been doing it for the last 80 years.
She is like, I mean, she looks good. She looks really good.
Well, I have all the respect in the world for her, but she was not on the day that I was there.
She was not there.
No.
Yeah,
she didn't bother to show up
she's
that
like,
day.
Who,
thanks, Babs.
Who's on? Hardwick? Spa day.
Oh, I think I'll take this day off.
Yeah.
I think it's a spa day.
Now, is Jenny McCarthy, would she, I mean...
Would she speak at my funeral?
Was that 20 years ago? That, not your funeral, the show.
I died 20 years ago.
No, the Singled Out.
Almost. Yeah, it was almost.
And so, I mean, that's a long time ago.
I know.
Is she going to, you're in New York, she's in New York.
Are we going to host Singled Out again?
Are you guys going to host a dating show?
Probably.
No, are you going to, is she going to come to the show, you think?
I don't think so. I haven't talked to her in years.
Well, you maybe should reach out. You know what? Maybe that could be a special. She should do a Nerdist podcast.
It would be interesting to have her on.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's never done one before.
It's also interesting, different stages. I mean, 20 years ago, I'm not a fan of the past in general.
Right.
Like, people are like, I met you 20 years ago. I'm like,
I was a grown-up then.
Oh, no.
I'm a grown-up now.
Sorry. And they're like, you were very nice. I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry about that, too. It's like...
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know if I have a contact information for her anymore.
Just look her up in the phone book.
Oh, the old phone book? Yeah. The one that they deliver to my house every 6 months?
Yeah, and it's getting smaller and smaller.
They're just
going to drop off a pamphlet.
I mean, at this point... When they're printing the phone book, they must be laughing as they're doing it. Like, right. I can't believe we're still making this happen.
People are still putting ads in here.
Yeah, ads for local attorneys and accident claims and
sad.
Shops.
It's very sad.
It is sad.
People can't get online.
I know.
You know, when there's a blackout in the post-apocalypse, well, I guess the phones would be out.
I'm going to go to... I went onto this weird yellow message board that everything was alphabetized in a weird sort of way.
So should I read ahead in Walking Dead? I should probably read ahead.
Read the comics?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a different experience.
Is there an audio version? No. Is there...
Yeah, I read it.
Then Rick said, hey, how are you? Not anymore. Not anymore. I'm going to go and shave a little bit. But yeah, no, I should read ahead. How many? There's innumerable, right?
Well, there's 120, I think.
Do they leave Atlanta area, the South, ever? No.
Not at this point. So it's, I think maybe issue, maybe 127 just came out. Does that sound right? 127 or so?
Wow.
And I'm two issues behind. So I have to read 126 and 127.
Oh, wow.
But it's a different experience, and there's only some touch points in the show because they transmute things that happen. Like, some characters don't exist in the comics that are on the show. Some things that happen to characters in the comics happen to other characters in the show.
Right.
Some things never happen. Like, there's no characters that are alive or dead in the reverse, and so it's not the same.
Who was your favorite guest on Talking Dead besides me?
Well, I mean, beyond Jim Gaffigan, I just
did you make
know.
Out with Michonne, the character?
I made out with the character of Michonne.
The woman who plays Michonne.
Denai?
Her name's Denai?
Denai, yeah.
That's my middle name. That's very
Jim Denai Gaffigan?
Jim Denai Gaffigan.
That's amazing.
Don't deny.
No. I've not made out with anyone from the show.
You made out with Lori?
Well, I made out with Nicotero. I made out with Greg Nicotero, but that's pretty much it. You know, I feel like there's...
Anyone you hate from the show?
I did not, despite what people think, I did not hate Marilyn Manson on the show. It's like that one episode is the most talked about episode we've ever had. I just think he had a different vibe going, and he was trying to control it. And
he was a little boozed up, right?
I don't know if he was or not.
Oh, really?
The rumor that I heard is that he drank all the scotch in Los Angeles, but I don't know if that's true. I didn't see it happen, so I can't prove that. I just feel like... You know, he's used to commanding a room, and he had his own ideas. And
that must have been hard for him to grow up the son of Charles Manson.
It was very... The son of Marilyn Monroe and Charles Manson.
I mean, what are the odds?
I know.
And then he goes into music.
Yeah. Well, because
tries to look as pale as me. That's impressive.
He wishes.
He wishes. He aspires to be as pale as me.
Yeah. And so, you know, he had his own thing going on. And I think he was just, he is ultimately a performance artist. And I think he was just doing performance art on the show to a degree, to the surprise of no one. And, at a certain point, I just kind of, just to keep the show moving, I just had to kind of shut him down. I had to be...
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean...
Just like a heckler in a way.
But, you know, Walking Dead, it's a serious thing. It's like, I mean, I was thrilled that I was informed and I was the best guest.
Yeah.
On the, but it's very serious. Like when you hear people on there that, which never happens, that's what people are kind of amazed by, is like, don't mess with my Walking Dead. It's
no, because
stuff.
They, you know, if people are very emotionally invested in Walking yeah. Dead, and so in exchange for their time that they're giving you, the minimum that you can do is have the show be informative and talk about things and try to be entertaining and not fuck off too much, you know, because if you're getting in the way of the business of the show, then people get cranky. And he was getting in the way of the business of the show.
I have an announcement. I've been hired to do talking that arm wrestling show on AMC.
Oh, Man at Arms.
Talking arm wrestling show.
Man of Arms. Man at Arms.
Yeah, arm wrestling show. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be... It's going to be talking arms.
Talking arms, yeah, great. And then everyone actually just talks, like makes a face on their
arm. Yeah, they just, you know, we have different people coming out. It's kind of like a lot of people that are on.
Are you going to do any arm wrestling on your show?
Yeah, I'll be doing that. A lot of people.
You good arm wrestler?
I'm probably one of the best. I'm probably the best arm wrestler comedian on my block.
So, a celebrity game of arms?
Yeah, it's a lot of, we're doing a tie-in with Cigar Aficionado. A lot of the people that are on the cover of that are going to be on the show.
How do you feel about leg-driven sports?
I'm a fan of a lot of them. You know, I like the bike riding, you know, because I was pretty good as a kid riding a bike. Like, I would ride a bike to school. You ever ride your bike into a parked car? I did that.
Yes, I've ridden my bike into parked car. I've ridden my bike into things that were easily avoidable.
Yeah. I rode a bike into a parked car, and you know who was in that parked car?
Hmm.
Marilyn Manson.
What? Marilyn Monroe had just given birth to him.
He had just been born.
They had Charles Manson on Skype because he obviously couldn't.
And you know who also was in there? Katie Holmes and Pete Holmes.
Katie and Pete were in there. Katie Holmes. Giving birth
and
to
Sherlock.
Pete at the same
and
time.
And Sherlock also. Her granddad,
Sherlock Holmes. Yeah.
And so there was a lot of Holmes there.
So do you mean Benedict Cumberbatch or do you mean like actual Sherlock Holmes?
You know, that's not his real name, right?
Right. Let's be honest.
I mean, you know, it's like there's British names and then there's just like, I feel like offended by that name. like his name, Benedict Cumberbatch, it feels like kind of, that's like code for fuck you, America.
I've always said, I've always...
That's a little bit anti-American.
Well, I'd always felt, and I said this when we did our BBC show, that I think the name Benedict Cumberbatch sounds like a porn star in the Harry Potter universe.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like a porn wizard.
You know, like someone like when they're like, you'd think that like over just generations, someone would be like, obviously we're not going to go by Cumberbatch anymore, right? I mean, look, I'd like to get a career in acting.
Starring Benedict Cumberbatch and Felicity Fuzznatch.
You know, it's like Cumberbatch. What does that mean? That's like, you know, like someone that
I think that's the thing on the tuxedo that wraps around your midsection.
No, that's the Cumberbund.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'm out of ideas.
That maybe a bunch of Cumberbunds
is a Cumberbatch. Yeah.
Yeah.
I whipped up a Cumberbatch of Cumberbunds.
Remember when we riffed on Cumberbatch?
No, I don't remember. What happened?
He was, you know, that Cumberbatch, he was in a lot of movies. All right, so best movie of the year.
Best movie of the year.
Oh, I keep forgetting I'm talking to you, and you're like, well, it's going to be American Universe, Mr. Universe, Mr. America.
It's going to be Mr. Universe, the Jim Gaffigan special from a few years ago.
But I think it was 12 Years a Slave, right? I mean,
let's just get it on the table.
It's got to be that, right? That's like the best movie in like the past 12 years, right?
Yeah, yeah. And then also a lot of the crap that I've been watching on Netflix.
Yeah.
But I can't remember any of it because it's always on in the background while I'm doing computer work.
Yeah. The Killing. Did you watch The Killing?
I watched the first season, the first half season of The Killing, but there was so much crying on the show that it made me very sad. Like the poor actress who just like who played the mother of it's like every scene was just like I think they probably just stopped putting in the stage direction. She's like, I'm just going to assume I'm crying in this scene. Like it was
who
very
hard to get our time back for some of that stuff.
Benedict Cumberbatch. Yes, he's the director of the Ministry of Time. Or it would be the Doctor. Doctor Who. You're a Doctor Who fan? No, you never
watched it. I've never watched Doctor Who.
God damn it, Jim. Would you please watch Doctor Who?
Is it that good?
Yes, and your kids would love it too.
You know, I don't even... All right, look, I'm going to lose a lot of people. I, you know, Sherlock, I think it's okay. I think it's okay.
Highly irregular, sir. Highly irregular. I am Benedict Cumberbatch. Enjoy your burrito.
I think that's the end.
That is the end. God bless him. The Nerdist universe.
Obsessed.
Obsessive. It's a great book. It's coming out.
So how long did it take you to perform this book? No, it's just a special.
Your nerd book. You did the audio version of it, right?
I did. It was fun.
How long did it take you? 5 years?
It took 5 years to do it. I did one word a day, and then we got it.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loreau, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.